hello, and thank you for tuning in to the Wisconsin Partnership Association podcast. I'm Jeremy Oddie, Director of Outreach and Education for the Wisconsin Parkinson Association. WPA provides hope, community support, and resources for people with Parkinson's and their loved ones. With this podcast, we are here to provide you with information on WPA, share information on Parkinson's disease, and introduce you to people in our community who are impacted by Parkinson's. Today, we'll be talking with Ginger Wooster and Joanne Hagner. Ginger was a care partner to her husband, Mark, who had Parkinson's disease for 18 years, while Joanne is currently a care partner with her husband, Rick, who's had Parkinson's disease for the last 2.5 years. They both love to travel and are here to share their experiences regarding the challenges of traveling with Parkinson's disease. They're also going to share some of the tips they have learned over the years to make the journey more memorable and less stressful whenever possible. Welcome, Ginger and Joanne. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Excellent. Well, we'll start with Ginger. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. As Jeremy said, my husband Mark had Parkinson's for 18 years. I was working for most of those 18 years, and I was the primary caregiver, but my job involved a lot of travel, which I enjoyed the travel, but that meant that I had to have in-home care for Mark while I was away. Fortunately, that worked out very well for us. I retired 2 years ago after 40-plus years in the healthcare industry. I have 2 grown children. One lives here locally in Wauwatosa. One lives in Oregon. I have 5 grandchildren, 3 here and 2 in Oregon, and I enjoy being involved in all of their activities. I do love to travel. I enjoy sailing, skiing, bicycling, pretty much anything outdoors.
Thank you, Ginger. Joanne?
Spent 22 years in the Army as the spouse with my husband, Rick, and retired back to the Milwaukee area because our family is here. I have taught, I have gardened, I quilt, interested in those types of things. We have 3 kids. One is in Nashville with his family. Another one just moved to Florida with his wife. And my daughter and her family are in Madison. And we love to travel. And many of those things that Ginger likes to do, Rick and I have enjoyed doing. But due to mobility issues and practicality, we now have to change our options.
Well, let's get into that in a minute. Before we do this, we're going to talk about travel. I'll start with you, Joanne. Tell us about one of your most memorable trips you've taken, and it doesn't have to be since Parkinson's disease.
Oh, most memorable was Alaska, and that was 6 years ago, and we got to spend 3 hours on the glacier and hiking the glacier. And that, again, would be one of the things that is not possible at this particular point in time. So when we go back to Alaska this next year, I will be dog sledding on the glacier. Rick will be doing something else that is more meets more of his needs. One of our recent cruises, we went to Orkney Island and did a food tour, which was fabulous, much more amenable to mobility issues and being able to interact with people and just enjoy the day.
Excellent. Ginger, same question.
That one's a tough one because we've traveled so many wonderful places and they're all memorable in their own way. Over the 18 years, we've gone to Europe several times, Mexico, the Caribbean, Florida, more often than not. Our favorites are Key West and Disney. We've been to Hawaii, we've been to Alaska, and they were all good memories. But I think because it was our last trip together, I'm going to say the Baltic cruise that we took. We went to Estonia, Russia, Finland, Sweden, and Denmark, and it was a great trip.
Thank you for sharing. I think the important part I'm going to tell the audience is you both talked about you're still traveling. Even after the diagnosis happened, I think that's important, and that's where we're going to get into today a little bit. So I'm going to start with Joanne. What kind of challenges, you know, like you said, it's been 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. You've made some changes. The Alaska trip, I think, is a great example. So what kind of challenges have you encountered, and how have you adapted with that when planning trips?
Well, recently, as you know, Parkinson's affects everybody differently and the mobility issues and such. And so we have finally gone to asking for handicapped rooms at hotels. Finding that all handicapped rooms are not equal. One that we recently stayed at had a tub shower. They put up the bars, the grab bars, but it was still climbing over the tub. And so those are questions to ask. The other thing that we have found is that some of the handicapped accessible rooms are pretty far from the elevator. So you have to walk the block down the hallway in order to get to your room. And so that's another thing that we are now looking at as far as hotel accommodations, is to make sure that they actually are what we think that they are.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good point. When we've done conferences, that's one of the things I have to ask hotels. I've warned myself that they have a handicap accessible shower, and it means they have a hand bar, but you still have to step 3 feet over the tub to get in.
That's it.
And so that's a very good point. I appreciate that. Anything you would add, Ginger, other challenges you've experienced?
Oh, well, my experience with the accessible rooms is far different from Joanne's. We've always had the wheelchair shower. We can just roll in. So I'm sorry that didn't work that way for you. And we've also had rooms close to the elevators. And when you're requesting your room, when you make your reservation, you can specify that you want to be near the elevator. And a lot of, when you check in online for hotels now, they allow you to choose your room, where it is. So we found that. I really didn't have a lot of challenges, and especially with the planning. I thought the planning was a lot of fun. One challenge we did have is, even with the best laid plans, things can go wrong. We found out the hard way. Our trip to the Baltics, an uneventful flight, everything was going well. We get to Copenhagen, and we're there, and our wheelchair is still in New York. So we just, all right, take a deep breath, step back, what are we going to do? The people at the airport were just fabulous. They loaned us one of their wheelchairs and said, just bring it back when you're done. It was like amazing how people will step up. The other thing we found out is, wheelchairs in cobblestone streets do not get along well. We're having a lovely leisurely stroll down the cobblestone streets in Copenhagen. All of a sudden, clunk, 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 the front wheel falls off the wheelchair. Oh, dear. Step back, take a breath. What are we going to do now? I was able to pull the wheelchair backwards as long as I tilted it back and left the wheels up. And so I'm walking backwards down Copenhagen. And then I also found out, do not wear flip-flops if you're going to be walking backwards. It does not work either. But otherwise, everything, I think the biggest advice I can say is double-check all of your reservations. Make sure everything is as you're thinking it's going to be. And then just go with the flow, because things will happen no matter how well you plan.
I think that's great advice, go with the flow. I think the other thing you mentioned, Ginger, that I think is important for everybody to think of, we're focusing on the partner with Parkinson's disease. Mm-hmm. Your comment about don't wear flip-flops. You know, you as the care partner, you need to wear the right footwear. You have to be adjusted so you can adapt on the fly, because you don't know what's going to happen. I think you've both probably experienced, you get somewhere, maybe it's a recent trip, and your partner starts getting fatigued, and it was a good day, so you left, and maybe they only had a cane or a walker, and now they're getting really tired. How do you adapt on the fly when that happens? Any thoughts? I'll start with Joanne.
Well, I was sharing with Ginger recently coming up, is that we were at Disney World and Universal for 10 days, week or so ago, with our kids who wanted to do everything. It was a mission to get there as early as you can, stay as late as you can. And Rick wanted to do what he could do, and it did get to the point where I had to set him down, go to the guest services, request a wheelchair, and get him back to the hotel. In a place like that, it's pretty easy to do because people are accommodating, and the security guard that was wheeling Rick, you know, just laughed and said, well, this is the first of today. There'll be plenty of others. But it's being able to be adaptive and have some kind of plan, and being able to call, not being afraid to call on people to help.
Mm-hmm. And I think the thing I've heard so far, and I mean, we're very short into this, you're both strong advocates. You're advocating, you're not afraid to ask, you're calling ahead, you're looking for things. We don't have the wheelchair, what are we going to do? You adapt on the fly. Are there other tips, a tip or two, that you can say, hey, here's what we've discovered that really works that I would recommend to anybody who's traveling, whether they have Parkinson's disease or not, but especially if they have Parkinson's disease? And I'll go with you first, Ginger.
Well, over the years, I have learned a lot. Did you know there's actually an app that will tell you the locations of all the handicapped accessible companion restrooms?
No. And what is the name of that app?
There are several.
Okay.
Just Google it and choose. I will say they've gotten better over the years. At the beginning, we had mixed success. Some were spot on, others not so much. But again, ask for help. The locals were always willing to step up and help you and direct you to where you might be able to use the restroom. When you're making your reservations, just allow a lot more time, I would say even twice the amount of time that you think you need, especially if you're having a connecting flight. The last thing you want to be doing is rushing to meet your connection and then your loved one has to use the restroom. It's much better to get to your gate early, sit and people watch, and just have a good time, and it'll save you a lot of frustration. When you're making your reservations, again, specify if you need a wheelchair to get you down the jet bridge. Take advantage of the airport. All of them have facilities like that. And they also have what they call an aisle chair, which is a very narrow wheelchair that fits in the aisle of the plane, so they can actually take you directly to your seat. So just make it known that you need that. Take advantage of early boarding. And also pay attention to the type of plane that you're going to be on. The regional jets are not as roomy. They're tight fit. They're not as comfortable. They can be a challenge if you have limited mobility. We always chose a seat near a restroom, and quite often they were bulkhead seats, so that was a double bonus because bulkhead seats have more room and closer to the restroom. If you do need to accompany your loved one to the restroom, just let the flight attendants know. They have little tricks that they can do to help tremendously. And the other thing, packing. Don't pack flip-flops, but pack about a half the amount of clothing that you think you're going to need. It's okay to wear things more than one. We also would bring clothes that dry easily and brought laundry detergent is because often you can do quite a bit of laundry in a bathtub or a sink or the shower, whichever you have, it works. And if you're not comfortable staying hotels and the hotels really don't have accessible rooms, consider renting a house through VVRO or Airbnb. We discovered that later on, and it was a really good thing to know because those, when you're online looking at those homes, you can tell right away if they're wheelchair accessible. They have a lot of spacious room. And sometimes it's just more comfortable in a home setting than in a hotel room. The other thing, if you're going to be using a rental car, reserve one that's going to hold a wheelchair. Not all of them do. The toughest thing we struggled with when you're crossing multiple time zones is how to keep your medications on track. I tried using my cell phone alarm, but it would change times with whenever you caught.
Right.
So that didn't work. So then I used the timer on my cell phone. We were at the stage later on, as the disease advanced, where we were taking meds every 2.5 hours. So we had a lot of timers. So I would set my timer on my phone, and it would go off. Or you could wear a watch or just something, so keeping on track. And then the other thing to consider is how, when you get to your destination, your normal medication time might be in the middle of the night. So how do you gradually adjust it down? So we would adjust each dose by like an hour. And over the course of a day or so, we were on the local time. Then you had to readjust backwards as you're coming home, but that really helped.
I think the adjusting medication, did you talk to the doctor about that ahead of time? You guys kind of got used to it? Okay.
By this time, we could tell when we needed medication.
Right. Well, after 18 years, you kind of have it down. I would say maybe in like Joanna Rick's case, where it's been 2.5 years, that may be a discussion you'd have with your doctor before you leave. But what tips have you learned in this?
Well, we did see his neurologist before we left, and she did give us She said one of the important things, besides using a wheelchair or electric conveyance, which we eventually got to, was dehydration.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an important thing to be aware of, because you do run into that issue. The more he drinks, the more restroom stops there are. And there is that quandary, especially if you're at a theme park standing in line.
Mm-hmm.
Though, of course, once you have the chair, you get to go to the front of the line. So that always helps. The other thing that we have found is that Rick has drug bags that he puts his medications in, which has worked well for him until our last trip, when he dropped the drug bag someplace along the way.
Mm.
So fortunately, we do carry extra drugs, as well as his full list of doctors and their numbers and the prescriptions that he has. We always pack a nightlight so that getting to the restroom, getting up in the middle of the night is so much easier. For a lot of folks with mobility issues, they have advised statin sheets at night so that you can move better. Well, we found that taking them with us was not conducive, so we went to satin pajamas, and they worked perfectly. Foldable cane, if he needed it, and the new thing that we picked up, a 360-degree spinner suitcase, because it's nothing that he has to drag, but it also adds extra support and balance as he walks with it next to him.
Mm-hmm. And now, we talked a little bit beforehand, Ginger, you said the other nice thing about the suitcases is as the disease advances, they fit across the wheelchair very nicely, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a dual benefit in a couple of ways.
As long as you don't have too many, you're stacked up so high that you can't. But it does work.
Well, I appreciate it. I think some of the tips you've given them, if I can summarize, is plan ahead. Really be detail oriented, plan ahead, read reviews, look at some of your options, and then be an advocate. Call, ask questions, whether it's a hotel, an Airbnb, rental car. I think that's a great tip is, you know, I've been there, we get to the rental car, like, oh, we got this shiny sports car. I'm like, yeah, where are we going to put the wheelchair? Where are you going to put the luggage? Where are you going to put... So doing all that and being very, very detail-oriented, I think, is great.
I would like to add one extra thing, is having an after-trip evaluation. Take a couple days, think about how the trip went. What would you do the same? What would you do differently? What adjustments need to be made for the next trip? The last four or five trips that Rick and I have taken, we've done this, and we have avoided some of the previous problems.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that we don't encounter new ones that we have to take a look at, but it helps with looking forward to the next trip.
Right. That's a great point, Joanne, is going over what happened. And I think the other one, and maybe, I mean, you kind of touched on it by going to the amusement parks, is making sure you communicate with who you're going with,
mm-hmm.
that things may change because Parkinson's is unpredictable. You know, 8 o'clock in the morning may be great. 10 o'clock in the morning may not be so good. So making sure they're fully aware of that, you know, your part of the day is going to change, but hopefully that's not going to affect their day at the park or anything
that
like that.
That is true.
What we found, if I may interject, going to Disney with the wheelchair, as Joanne said, we want to be the first ones there and the last ones there. So we would just stay at a property on Disney itself, and they had shuttle buses that went back that were handicapped accessible. So if the family wanted to stay and Mark was getting really tired, we would just pop back to the condo and rest. And,
mm-hmm.
and we did that several times.
Yeah. So, you know, don't expect that everybody can go all day, every day. Take planned breaks.
And I'll interject a non-Parkinson story. Is my mother had a knee replacement about 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and she went to Disney with my nephews, and because she was in a wheelchair, they got to go to the front of the line for all the rides.
That's it.
So they thought that was the best thing ever. So while, you know, in your cases, Grandpa may think, oh, I'm in a wheelchair, I'm slowing everything down, it's actually making the rides a lot more fun for the kids because they go on and not have to stand in line.
The other advantage of traveling with a wheelchair, too, when you're coming in off the plane, you get to go to the front of the line in customs.
Yes.
They really do accommodate you that way.
Excellent. So I'm going to change course just a hair. You both worked together to write an article for our magazine on some of the travel, and I think we focused on some local locations and travel. But in that discussion, Ginger, you shared that you always would have a dough bag.
Yeah.
And you kind of talked about what that is. Can you share with everybody listening what that dough bag was, what it meant to you? I'm sure it changed based on location, but kind of the concept of what that looked like.
It actually did. We always had a go bag. And in our case, the go bag was just simply a backpack that had several compartments. Everything went into it, each and own individual compartment, so I knew exactly where everything was. At the beginning, it started off, travel was easy. We just had snacks and beverages. Of course, I used it also as my purse because one less bag to keep track of. Everything was in it. All the travel documents, everything, meds, all had their little spot. As the disease progressed, we gradually added a urinal, which works if your loved one is male, not so much if the other way.
Right.
And that saved a tremendous amount of time looking for bathrooms. It really helped a bit. And then later on in the advanced stages, we had to add incontinence supplies, changes of clothing, basically, whatever you need for your loved one in any given day, have some of that in a go bag. We would take medicine refill bottles because they're exactly the same label and everything, put a smaller amount of medicine in the refill bottles and keep all of his meds in the go bag as well. And that way, if you're traveling and something comes up quickly and you don't have time to plan, you just grab the bag and hopefully everything's in there. I usually always, a day or two before we're doing something, I'd make sure that it was stocked, ready to go. And the backpack fit really well on the handles of the wheelchair, so I didn't have to carry it on my back. It was good. It
and you would take that getting on the plane as well as any location you would go.
Backpack
would,
is my carry-on.
It basically went with, it goes anywhere is kind of. I heard one of the things, we had a support group down in Rockford, and one of the facilitators' wives had put together a go bag, where she actually made tulips out of them, which was really cute.
Mm.
But she always had washcloth. She always had a washcloth in it because you never know what's going to come up.
Yes, I would. When I said supplies, I wore the latex gloves, had wipes. Always bring plastic grocery bags, those trash bags, too. You'll need those.
That's a great tip. I think it's a good thing that everybody, and I like you said, we go through it every day. What did we lose that we need to add? What should we add next time? And like you said, I'm sure it's the bag got maybe a little bigger as years went on, but
a little heavier. Mm-hmm. And it always helps to have a change of clothes as well.
With that, I'm going to transition to Joanne a little bit. With the article, you did a lot of research on Wisconsin State Parks, things they
mm-hmm.
offer.
Yes.
Can you summarize a little bit about what was, because hopefully they're going to read the article, give them a little bit of an overview of what was in there and what you kind of found in your research.
Well, when I was initially asked to do this, and Ginger volunteered to help out with that, which was fabulous, travel and part of me started thinking about the things that we have given up. We have given up the canoeing. We have given up the hiking. We have given up, and that there should be some kind of accessibility for people with mobility issues. And so doing some searches on just people with mobility issues and state parks or activities and things, came up with a number of places and like the DNR, which has accessibility for people. And as I've been talking with them through the research with this article, they are even increasing their accessibility in many areas for people with mobility issues, wheelchair issues, walkers, things of that nature. At this particular point in time, they have there's cross-country skiing. It's a sit ski. You sit down and you ski on it. And again, as you mentioned, it's in the article and it's also on the DNR website. But they have six parks across, state parks across the state that have, unfortunately, only one. But in our article, we have included the area that it's at, the website, and the phone number. And again, with going to the DNR or any other place looking for there are things that are accessible, call ahead. Make sure that the sit ski is available. Make sure that the hiking path is clear, especially as we come up to snow and things. So they have all kinds of really helpful, not only places that you can go, and then, of course, in the summer, there's kayaking. There's water chairs, you know, so your loved one can get in the water without worrying about falling and balance issues in the sand. They also offer a lot of information about what you should wear, which is very important. We don't think about dress so much for our loved one sitting in a wheelchair because, you know, most of our jackets go waist, you know, to the waist.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're sitting on a plastic seat and your bottom is getting cold,
right.
You know, or your legs are getting cold because you're not being as mobile as you should be, or they don't like to wear a hat,
mm-hmm.
You know, so, and 72% of your heat goes out through your head. So, so all of those things play into being able to get out and enjoy Wisconsin winter and to enjoy the things that you have enjoyed before and can continue to do that again. And Ginger, as we were consulting with this, had said, you know, do it with groups. You know, either if you can get your support group together to do this and to plan for a short period of time first. We don't need to make this an all-day affair. Again, with her to-go bag, the snacks and the drinks, because concession stands are closed at the
mm-hmm.
state parks during the winter, as are the most of the bathrooms, because of issues with freezing pipes and such. Recently came across an article in the Journal of Wheelchairs that they, for it's, it was rugged outdoor wheelchairs placed around Wisconsin, free to use. And they will go in, they say, 12 inches of snow. So, I don't know, haven't tried it. But, you know, it's something we, to be able to get out and think that during the winter I am not confined to my house.
Absolutely.
And, again, when we were talking about crampons for your shoes to grab the ice and the snow, and trekking poles so that you have more mobility just walking in the neighborhood, walk down the block, come back. Just an opportunity to get out and enjoy some of the air.
I mean, I think that's a great overview because we've talked many times on this podcast
mm-hmm.
how important exercise and activity are. And Wisconsin winters are great. They last usually like October 1st till May 30th or so. So, you know, if we can get you out those 9 months and get people active,
mm-hmm.
but I do think, you know, in your discussion, you can also take advantage of some of these trails in the summertime.
Oh, definitely.
In springtime. And what I'm hearing as you talk, you have family in Oregon, Tennessee, Florida.
Oh, sure.
If you go, you probably would reach out to the DNRs there that maybe you can go if you're staying for a week or two and you want to get out and hiking is what you do or just enjoying nature, that may be talking to their DNR and seeing what accessible opportunities they have in other states as well.
Oh, definitely. And Wisconsin, unfortunately, has no national parks, but the national parks are fabulous.
Yes. So, and I do know, kind of going off of other activities,
mm-hmm.
There's a sportsman group in the state that if you're in a wheelchair but you're an avid hunter, they will actually take you out. They will get you out into accessible wheelchair, accessible tree stands.
Right.
They will you have vehicles that take you out there. So there's a lot of things you can still do no matter what time of year it is.
Fly fishing, things of that nature. And again, there is quite, as Ginger mentioned, the applications, the apps that you can find now. I did a quick search on apps for people with mobility issues. There must have been 20,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to go through, and again, it's going to be a catcher's catch can and to try it out and see if it works. But they are coming up with more and more things and activities and options for people that have mobility issues.
So, and again, it goes back to planning, looking into the details, seeing what's out there.
Yes.
Now, I want to ask, you mentioned trekking poles. I've heard you
trekking poles.
Trekking poles, yes.
Yes.
And you both researched them, and I hear one of you has started using them. Can you tell us what they are and how they're helping you, Ginger?
They're basically fancy walking sticks. They look like ski poles, but they are, when they're properly adjusted, they give you a lot of extra balance. They alleviate the stress on your knees and your ankles. And some people say they are good for fending off animals, but I haven't gotten that part right yet. I do find them minor collapsible. They fold down so that you can put them in a suitcase to take with you. You cannot take them as carry-on. TSA will not let you through, but you have to put them in your check bag. Yes, they're very easy to use, very lightweight, very inexpensive.
Just as you mentioned TSA, one of the things that Rick and I recently did is we got TSA pre-approved. The pre-check. He no longer has to take off his shoes or his belt or empty his backpack or any of those things that would cause a good half an hour delay going through security. So I just wanted to
That's an excellent point. I have always had pre-check, so I never even thought to mention that. Take it for granted. So.
And again, it's knowing what's out there and taking advantage of the services. So,
and may I add on that, too,
absolutely.
Going through pre-check or going through security with a wheelchair, it's not even necessary to get out of the wheelchair to go through. They can take you through. You will go through an extenuating screening, but you can stay in the wheelchair, and they'll wand you all over the place. But
right. If you're having one of those days, that's a good thing to know, that I'm going to stay here and that's how it's going to go. I think you've given us some great tips. I think I like the things I've heard so far, taking a nightlight on the trip. Especially, I've been in those hotels where you can't see a thing. So having a nightlight to have to get up in the middle of the night or anything else that's going on.
Especially the ADRC ones that you've been giving out at the support group.
Yes.
They're fabulous.
I will pass that on to my friends at the ADRC.
There you are.
I also think, the pre-check is great. Calling ahead, finding out, what do you mean by accessible? Is it a wheelchair shower? Is it just a regular shower? How close are you to the elevators? I think that's something we don't always consider, but it's very important. And then planning and having details. And then I think, Joanne, another thing you mentioned that is huge for everybody, at the end of the trip, summarize it. What worked? What didn't work? What do we want to change next time? Because we know Parkinson's is an ongoing disease.
Yeah.
So what worked now, 6 years from now, may not be the same. So what does that look like? And you want the trip to be fun because you can tell the way you both talk about it. Travel is so important to what you guys do in activity. So you want to make sure you keep that as part of what you're doing. So with that, what is any closing thoughts, final summaries that either one of you want to share to kind of say, here's what I've learned or here's what I would highly recommend going forward?
One thing we haven't touched on is as you're doing your planning online, there is an amazing amount of information there. Every place has reviews. Just be aware that some companies write their own glowing reviews. So I really didn't pay a lot of attention to the 5-star, but I would read every single 1- and 2-star review and see if whatever their issue was that going to be a deal breaker for me. I didn't usually call ahead. I just would email the contact us section of their webpage. Always got responses. And honestly, if I didn't get a response, then that would have knocked whatever out of consideration. And so we're not going to do that. We talked a lot about planning, and Joanne and I do most of our own. But if that's not something that sounds interesting to you, there are travel agents that specialize in accessible travel. Let them do all of the work if you don't enjoy it. I particularly enjoyed the planning and the research and everything, but
And that's a good point, Ginger, because for our cruises, we go through a travel agent. We have been using Barb for 12 years now. She knows what our situation is. She knows what we will put up with as far as a place or not. And when you have those last minute airline, so you've planned this wonderful trip, you planned it a year out, and a month out, the airline calls you and sends you an email or something and says, well, your direct flight is no longer a direct flight, it's now a 2-stopper. And I'm going like, yeah, no, Barb, take care of this. And she does. So that is fabulous. The other thing I would add as far as travel is that sometimes your loved one is a little reticent about traveling. It's much easier to stay at home. It's not. And so I plan anyhow. And sometimes I say, you know, this is what I'm planning on doing, so let me know if you want to come along. And, you know, and he does. And we have a great time. And again, as we review the aftermath, you know, what happened, what went well, what didn't, we start looking at the next trip.
Excellent. Well, thank you both. I think that these are some great ideas, great tips. I want to, before I conclude, you mentioned cruises.
Yes.
I've been on a few.
Yes.
The hallways are not the widest.
No.
Getting on and off a boat can be a challenge. So what are some of the things you would have experienced with people with Parkinson's disease that you may want to say, hey, if you are thinking of a cruise, I want to avoid a cruise. I've had great times on a cruise. But when you have special needs and special issues, are there anything you would recommend or kind of put out there that people should consider?
Well, we haven't gotten progressed yet to the wheelchair or the walker issue. What we really love about the cruises is that your time is yours. We have done the coach cruises before through Ireland and such. Getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and having your bag outside your door is no longer acceptable. Sitting on a bus for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, it just doesn't work anymore. So if Rick is having an off day, he can do whatever he wants on the cruise, on the cruise ship, and I don't have to worry about whether he's being fed or not, because there's food, or have it brought to the room. And we have always traveled that we are not joined at the hip. If there's something that he wants to do and I don't want to do, and vice versa. So this also works out. There, as I mentioned, I'm going to do a dog sled ride on a glacier, and he is not going to be doing that. He'll have something else to, he'll find something else to do, or read a book. We do always get a balcony room so that he can sit out, enjoy the fresh air, the scenery, if there is, other than miles of ocean, and just read if that's what he wants to do. So we find that that is working much better for us than what we've done in the past.
I fully agree. Cruising is the easiest way to travel, especially when you're in a wheelchair. Yes, the hallways are narrow, but if you find a cruise ship that has accessible rooms, those rooms are right by the elevators. So it's very easy to get in and out. The rooms are, at least the ones that we have had, the rooms are much larger, plenty of room. And as Joanne said, there's so many things to do on a cruise ship. Other than if you don't want to take shore excursions, you don't need to. Speaking of shore excursions, there are accessible shore excursions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live close enough, and when we were in the Baltics, we had a private tour through Estonia and Russia. We were the only ones on the excursion. So it was fabulous.
Excellent.
You know, they have the accessible van. You just drive your wheel or ride the wheelchair in, and everything is taken care of. So I strongly recommend cruises. We never had issues getting on and off. It was always very, yes, you're going down the gangplank, but there's the cruise ship staff are there to help and assist, because sometimes going down is not always that easy because you have to make sure you don't go too fast, and then going up, that ramp is a little hard to push, but if you get some strong guy on the cruise, helps you push, it's all good.
Especially if they're a long land excursion and you're probably a little tired, pushing back up that ramp can be a challenge. Well, Ginger, Joanne, thank you both for your time today and sharing your experiences. We hope this allows our listeners to understand how to better plan their next trip and tips they can use to make their trip more enjoyable. Also, I hope this will help care partners and the person with Parkinson's disease plan for their trips and consider all things that go into the journey. If you have your own tips and tricks to share, please reach out to us. We would be happy to share your ideas with others within the Parkinson's community. You can email your tips to email your tips to mail at wiparkinson.org. Again, that's mail at wiparkinson.org. Or give us a call at 414-312-6000. 6990. As we discussed today, it's important to stay active and continue to do what you love, travel included. The next issue of the Wisconsin Parkinson Magazine will have an article devoted to Parkinson disease and travel written by Joanne and Ginger. As discussed in previous episodes, our goal is to help you manage your journey and find things to help you manage your diagnosis. One way to do this is attend the many educational programs offered by the Wisconsin Parkinson Association. Our program calendar will start up once we are through the winter months here in Wisconsin, but you can mark your calendar today for our annual holiday reception on Wednesday, December 4th at the Embassy Suites Hotel in Brookfield. And also save the date now on March 27th for our renewed treat, which will be in Pewaukee, and June 19th for the annual Parkinson Disease Symposium, which will be in Appleton. These programs are all free to attend, so we encourage you to take this opportunity to join a community of people with Parkinson's and their loved ones. Thanks again to Ginger and Joanne for being our guests today, and thank you for joining us.